Hi, I'm Ben Trefney, news director here at KALW, and I want to invite you to become a member of KALW. We are 70% listener supported, so as you listen to this piece from our newsroom, please make sure to go to the Donate Now button at KALW.org. Thanks.
KALW.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Alice Wong grew up in Indiana in a Chinese immigrant family. She attended college there, but San Francisco was calling her. Today, she's an activist with a disability who's been recognized by former President Obama, Time magazine, and most recently, British Vogue. Alice founded the Disability Visibility Project in 2014 to amplify disability media and culture. That project led to a podcast and now a book, a collection of personal essays by writers who give their take on living with disabilities today. KALW's Janae Darden caught up with Alice Wong.
You said something that changed your life was the American Disability Act. And you said that basically helped you live the life that you had envisioned for yourself. Where were you at when that came into effect? And what were the changes that you foresaw for yourself?
So I was a sophomore at high school. In 1990, with the law passed. And, you know, I have to be really honest, I don't remember, noticing it. It wasn't something that registered, deeply into my brain. You know, it really wasn't until I graduated from high school and needed to go to college that I really realized, wow, you know, this law came right in time to really, you know, ensure that I do have, the ability to request reasonable accommodations. It's been a real key in order for me to go to school and get what I need and just have a law that I could call my own.
Mm-hmm.
I just say, hey, this is, you know, something that I would need to perform my daily activities and just not have to beg for it, even though I think the experience now is still very difficult. You know, a law doesn't change the world, you know. I think It's really about people power.
Okay, so you figured out this life that you wanted. The ADA kind of helped you say, hey, I can make this come true.
Yeah.
Then you told your family, I want to move to California. How did your family feel when you said, I want to move to California?
I think they do. I think because I really felt suffocated and stifled in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, hey, San Francisco Bay Area is such an epicenter of a huge, vibrant, active disability, you know, community. And, you know, they were the heart of where a lot of independent living movement happened. You have a large community of disabled people, just like, you know, any other community where, when you're seen, it's the vibe is different, you know, you feel it.
You write in your book that people with disabilities are more visible than ever.
Speaking for myself, I think the internet has been a game changer. I think the ability to blog on your own, do you have a Twitter account? There are so many really, really cool, disabled and deaf artists and just everyday people just, you know, creating content. We don't need to write an op-ed and just, you know, cross our fingers that the editor won't run it. We could just publish our own stuff. And I think that's given so many marginalized communities a base. Being on social media does have its huge risks. I mean, it is a dumpster fire. Let's, you know.
And that's a mild way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bag of burning poop. I mean, it's, you know, when I talk about visibility, I'm not sugarcoating it. It's not even literal visibility, right? It's about being comfortable in your own skin. But the fact that there are people who are at that place, and they're telling their stories, you know, in many ways, by being visible, hopefully it gives permission to other folks who are just still figuring stuff out. Like, you're not alone, that you're not alone. One of the ways that helps is to see yourself represented in different ways.
I know one thing that's come up for people with disabilities is for a long time, they would ask, you know, when there's events, it's like, can you stream it at, you know, at conferences and stuff? You know, people with disabilities, like, I can't attend. Can you stream it so I can watch it from home? And these organizations would say, oh, we don't have the capacity. That's why I say COVID is a reflection, so much of a reflection of some of the issues in this society. And now people are at home and they can't go out. And now all of these organizations and companies are streaming.
It's super interesting to see when, let's just face it, like, non-disabled people suddenly have something taken away from them. Oh, this is unfair. Oh, what am I gonna do? Oh my gosh, this is, I can't believe this. We gotta do something. You know, suddenly there's capacity. But disabled people ask and tell people, hey, this is problematic or this is inaccessible. Usually a few things either happen. Like, usually we're not believed.
Mm-hmm.
We're complaining. We're asking for too much. I think, again, the pandemic has shown, like, suddenly everybody is, you know, impacted, and they're just making things happen without really acknowledging the years of advocacy by sick and disabled people. What's also really telling during this pandemic, what kinds of people are disposable, right? I mean, this pandemic has really shown,
yes,
very much the racist and xenophobic ableist, you know, how we really feel about the people in our community, right? Like this, it's all seen as this, like, acceptable loss, right? Like, nobody's, like, we don't see the country really responding and really acknowledging the systemic inequality. I mean, you see people in prisons and nursing homes dying at alarming rates, And why don't we give a shit about people who are behind bars? I mean, it's because we can't see them. It's because they're separate from us. And when you have a system that perpetuates segregation, it allows us to devalue people or just render them as invisible. And this is Black, brown, older people, disabled people, it's all, you know, interconnected.
Yeah. This conversation has taken an intersectional turn, and your book is super intersectional. Super intersectional. I mean, it's about, of course, living with disability. It's about race. It's about class. It's about gender. I mean, it's just so culture, religion. I mean, it's so intersectional. What have you learned from this book?
Oh, well, thank you so much for noticing that. And, you know, I wanted to show, not tell. What I've learned is that, you know, for me, this is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, this book is just one of many books out there by disabled people. But I think there's room for so much more. I think for me, this book is a snapshot of the disabled experience is like for some people in our current time period. You know, there are some very serious pieces, but there's a lot of beauty and joy as well. And I think we don't see enough joy. You know, I think one of the ways we do stay alive is finding joy in one another.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that to me is what's helped me is the relationships I have with people, making time for myself, eating desserts. But yeah, we have to make space for joy, and we have to take pleasure in what we can. Because there is joy in being disabled. I think that goes against almost every major kind of idea.
Yes, it
or
does.
Narrative or portrayal. If you actually talk to people who have these disabilities, it's like, I'm just living my life the best way I can. You know, just like everybody else. It's really the oppression and the low expectations people have of us that's really super, super toxic. And, you know, that's what needs to be dismantled.
That was activist Alice Wong speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. Alice's book is Disability Visibility, First-Person Stories from the 21st Century. Find more information about it at KALW.org.